Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Back of Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. Reminder that the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Thunder Nellis coming up 9 to 11 today. Bonnie Blair is going to be on the show. That is, if that's not must listen, I don't know what the heck is. Other than, I guess, of course, if you have Owen Reese on the show, which then is beyond must listen. Joining us now, speaking of which, on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law, is the one and only Owen Reese. You can follow him on social media at Reese Draft. He is the Assistant Director of College Scouting, Optimum Scouting, and the Shrine Bowl. And of course, you can find him from time to time on the Pack-A-Day podcast as well. Owen, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I appreciate you joining us. It looks like you are busy at work at the moment, so taking a couple minutes off to join us, I appreciate it greatly.
Yeah, not a problem. In the beautiful solar fields of Potosi right now, so...
Oh, what more could you possibly want in life than that? Owen, we were talking this last segment of our most interesting and intriguing Packers for 2025. We had a whole list of them, but when I say interesting and intriguing Packers for this upcoming season, who's the first person that comes to mind for you?
I'm probably going to steal Tommy's answer. I'm going to take Elgton Jenkins, right? Just as far as he's a guy that played center at Mississippi State, and you bring him to Green Bay and you put him at guard, and he's been able to moonlight there in the past, and I'm generally more pro team on this stuff, but like if the Packers are going to ask him to bounce around constantly and he has the ability to do these things, I am a little bit on his side as far as the contract thing goes. But he's been able to do it in couple game spurts. Moving back to center full time is a bit of a different thing, but obviously he has experience doing it. And I think once he's back into the groove of things, it'll be shouldn't be too big of a deal. But allowing him moving around and allowing, you know, Aaron Banks and who do they play at right guard and what the case may be there. I think the tackles are probably set. I think that's where some of the uncertainty is in the interior of that line. And I don't think it's due to a lack of capable bodies, but we'll just kind of have to see how it works out.
Yeah, and I want to get into all of this with you because I know you're definitely more of an offensive line expert, certainly than I am. I'll say that much. And I kind of wanted to start even with Elgton Jenkins, so that's kind of a perfect place to kind of go here. When you look at Elgton, you know, he's played center in college, obviously. As you mentioned, he's had a cups of coffee there in the last handful of seasons. For the most part, it's looked fine. I'm a pretty firm believer that if you put him there full time and he gets the practice time at camp, it's going to be something that he can do at a very high level. But assuming he gets to camp sooner rather than later, which we don't know exactly how that's going to go, how confident are you that he can just pop back in there at center and still be the full-time center and kind of perform like he did at that position in college or better?
I feel pretty confident about it. It's just going to be a matter of him being like having a full offseason to prepare for that, right? I think there's a big difference between, hey, it's week 13, our center just got dinged up, can you bounce there for a week? Yeah. As opposed to like, hey, you're just going to do this full time again now. It's not like it's nothing overwhelmingly different, but just as far as kind of reacclimating yourself and getting used to running the show at center, as opposed to, you know, being able to do it for a week at guard or moving from guard to center, but just kind of being able to lead that unit and be the focal point, the real connection to Jordan Love and how they see the defense. So I think that'll be the bigger thing now that he has a full offseason to prepare for, or however long he's known they're planning on doing that. I think that's a huge asset for him. And I would probably say like an 8.5 to 9 confidence that he's going to be able to do that. Obviously, it's not easy. Otherwise, everyone would do it. But he's done it in the past at a high level for a sustained period of time. And, I really don't have too much doubts that he can do it this upcoming season at the NFL level, full time, but you know, that's why they play the games, right?
I'm right there with you, but like you said, it is why they play the games. That is why he's one of the more interesting players this upcoming season. I want to talk to you about the two offensive linemen that are, of course, incredibly talented, but we just don't have a lot of proof of concept of what they can be yet. Of course, one of them is because it's a rookie in Anthony Belton. The other is Jordan Morgan, the first round pick from a year ago, who we got a small smattering of playing time from, but of course, the injuries limited him this past season. What are your expectations as you kind of saw these guys coming out of the draft for those two this upcoming season? And then where do you kind of feel like both of these players fit just even for their like best positions and how they could fit on this offensive line?
I expect Jordan Morgan to play. I don't know if he'll start. I don't know what the case is, but if you're a first round pick year two, he should, right? I mean, maybe he doesn't, and that's maybe not an indictment of him, but the expectation, I would, at the very least, in some type of rotation or seeing the field. I do think he's a bit more versatile. I know there was some talk right after the draft about Belton potentially playing guard. That I don't really see that. I think he's a little bit like sized out for it. A little too long, a little too big a frame. Obviously, not that there haven't been huge guards in the past, but I think to me, like, he's a kid, he has to fail at tackle first before I would consider anything. I think Morgan is probably also a natural tackle, but, depending on who you listen to or who you talk to with length concerns or whatever that may be, I do think his skill set would very, very easily translate to guard. Belton's, I really don't see that, but who's to say? But I think I'd be surprised if we see Anthony Belton much this year, to be honest, just as far as coming through the draft process. I will say this is the lightest he's ever been, as far as a football player. I know when he went from Georgia military to North Carolina State, he was about 390, just a huge dude, and he's continuing to trim down. I mean, he'll never be small, but as far as a guy that he's getting in better shape, but I still see him as a bit more of a long-term project. Jordan Morgan, to me, is a bit more of a ready-made guy, and while there was a position switch, inside to guard, I expect him to play, and I don't know if he'll start at right guard, but I would be shocked if he doesn't have a fairly more substantial role this year than he did last year.
I'm right there with you. And as far as, Anthony Belton being a tackle, we saw that in minicamp and OTA so far. They put him at left tackle, right tackle. They did not move him in on the interior at all. It has been tackle only. We'll see if that continues in training camp as well. But I think that's another interesting piece to keep an eye on. We're being joined by Owen Reese. You can find him on social media at Reese Draft. Owen, if you were in charge here of the Packers offensive line, screw what the Packers have done so far. If you were in charge of the Packers offensive line and had to put this offensive line together from left to right, what is your ideal version of this offensive line?
I think ideally, right, in a perfect world, I think you have Jordan Morgan at left tackle, and that's nothing really that Rashid Walker's done wrong, right? But I think... Sure. As a higher pedigree, bigger investment, I think that's, in a perfect world, that's where you're moving. Good Jordan Morgan, Aaron Banks, Elton Jenkins, right? Again, probably Sean Ryan, and then Zach Tom. Luckily, they have some depth. They have some flexibility there. I think Rashid Walker's going to start at left tackle. But I think, if you're saying, what do we think for forecasting the future and what we're going to do, I think you would like Jordan Morgan to just straight take that job and make your decision a lot easier. But as far as like what the best product on the team tomorrow would be, I think Rashid Walker will likely be there. But that's how I think I would do it. And then you'd like to see some of those other interior guys, Jacob Monk, maybe Travis Glover. Glover's a guy who it's interesting because I just made those comments about Belton staying at tackle. Glover's a guy I could see potentially sliding in. I think Kadeem Telfort has in the past as well. Some of those bigger bodies inside at guard, but just to kind of create and continue that competition at right guard. But I'd expect Sean Ryan to have it unless they play Jordan Morgan there, in which case I could see a rotation. But and I think in a perfect world, you go Morgan, Morgan, Banks, Jenkins, Ryan, and Tom, and let it rip come week one.
And I think we could potentially see that, or maybe just like that competition at left tackle, or like the rotation, like you mentioned earlier, with Morgan and Walker maybe rotating a little bit at left tackle. But we'll see. That's what training camp is for, and we'll get some of those storylines coming out very, very soon. Last offensive line question, even though I know we could spend the entire time talking offensive line, and you would be more than okay with it. it's list season, of course, Owen. ESPN put out their lists of offensive tackles, I know. And you look at, you know, where Zach Tom was. He was not in the top 10. He was not even in the honorable mention. He was at the end of the list of others receiving votes. Disrespectful towards Zach Tom, or is this a fair ranking for him?
I don't know. I mean, no, I don't think so. I mean, if opposing defensive linemen said that he wasn't good, I think he may take a bit more exception to it. But ultimately, there's 64 starting tackles, and depending on how we see, I mean, like, I think Zach Tom's a very nice player. I'm not going to sit here and argue that he's a top 5 to 8 offensive tackle in the league, right? And that's not a knock on him either. So, I mean, realistically, whether he's number 9, whether he's 25, it's a very eye of the beholder. Different tastes. What kind of offense are you running? What kind of skills do you prefer? He's a nice offensive tackle, and I'm very happy the Packers have him. I don't think it's anything disrespectful. I wouldn't call him a premier offensive tackle in the NFL. And again, that's not a knock on him. He's not Lane Johnson. He's not even Jordan Mailata. He's not Trent Williams, you know. So as far as those types of things go, I don't look too far into it. I guess ultimately I would have, if he was left off the list entirely, that would be an issue. But if he's in others receiving votes, it's all totally the same. Fair. You're on the radar. It is what it is.
Totally fair. I totally get that. And again, it's a listicle season sort of thing. It's fun conversation, but it doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot at the end of the day. We're being joined by Owen Reese at Reese Draft, Assistant Director of College Scouting for Optimum Scouting and the Shrine Bowl, right here on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law. All right, training camp is obviously a week away, Owen. As just you look forward to what's going to be happening at Packers training camp, what are you most excited about? What do you want to learn? What is your top of mind viewing guide for Packers training camp?
Probably selfishly, just from the scouting side of things, I'm excited to see like the bottom of the roster, which is probably not the common answer. But when you get guys, and because in a little bit from the rundown you gave me before the show, this kind of will tie into that a little bit. But can Jamon Johnson, can Warren Brinson, can Naz Stackhouse, can they contribute? Are they what we think they could be, or are they rightfully undrafted free agents and seventh round picks that will maybe make the roster or be a practice squad guy? Or, right, can those guys provide legitimate depth and legitimate competition to the room? Because I think the O-line's going to be fine. I think the skill positions and the offense realistically has no excuse to not be above average to very, very good. But defensively, how will the spine of that defense be, right? I mean, I Edge Cooper had a very inspiring second half of last year, but I don't think anyone is, aside from Xavier McKinney, going to tell you that there are any elite players in the middle of that Packer defense, right? Rashawn Vegary is very good. Edge Cooper could be very good. Xavier McKinney is very talented. But outside of that, right, is TJ Slayton going to be, or TJ Slayton's gone, but how is that going to be? Kenny Clark moving around, again, some of those younger guys in there, can they handle it? Can Lucas Van Ness be what we want him to be theoretically, right? Who's that third rusher going to be? Because to me, that's where, and like, if those bottom of the roster guys can kind of help bridge that gap and circle around, that makes me feel a lot better. If they look like undrafted guys and late round rookies, probably going to have a little bit more hope as a strategy, which as we both know, isn't always great. But as far as some of those guys, if Jamon Johnson can be a fourth linebacker, provide Tyron Hopper with some legitimate competition as a third or fourth guy, again, can the Georgia DTs be what we think they can be? Because if those two can combine to be a competent rotational defensive lineman, I start to feel a little bit better about it. You know, so that's going to be where I'm excited to see. Obviously, on the outside, the DBs, right, is how does Nate Hobbs fit into this? Can Keyshawn Nixon legitimately do it? Some of those other questions. But to me, obviously, and as you know, I usually gravitate a little bit more towards the line of scrimmage. And that's where I'll see if they can be solid up the middle, I'll feel okay. Because and as much as we would love this defense to just be this elite, lethal unit, the way the Packers offense should be theoretically, I don't want to compare them to like the Indianapolis Colts of the mid-2000s, right? But like, let's get a lead and let's play with it, as opposed to we're going to depend on our defense to hold teams to 10 points, right? And so if you can be, it's not that huge of a deal if you're not the most stingy defense if you can be opportunistic, or you can be maybe a bit more high variance as far as, you know, there's going to be some weeks where you have a bunch of sacks, or, you know, we had three or four picks. That's huge, right? But so to me, ultimately, can the bottom of that defense, can the bottom of the roster raise the floor is probably the best way I can put it, and, you know, kind of create a sense of stability in a unit that, right, conceptually we know what they should be probably, but there are a bit more question marks than probably you would preferably like to see.
No, I think that's totally fair. Before we get you out of here, Owen, you mentioned three of those players, Brinson, Jamon Johnson, and then Nasir Stackhouse as well. All three of those players were, of course, at the Shrine Bowl. I'm sure you took a very good look at all three of those with what you were kind of working on. Before even the draft took place, what was kind of your view of those three players, expectations for those three players, and what can they potentially bring to Green Bay?
Yeah, I mean, I think... So Jamon Johnson was at Georgia for the first 4 years of his career, went to Kentucky the last year. So that was kind of cool to see those guys reconnect. Johnson, to me, I was a bit, I mean, I knew he wasn't a top 100 prospect or anything. I was a bit surprised he went undrafted. But he's a guy who's a big, thick dude who is athletic and can run in a straight line. I think the other thing, I talked to him during the week and kind of the difference between going from Georgia to Kentucky. He kind of mentioned the lack of complexity and kind of playing just more of a true base 3-4 inside backer as opposed to kind of the more multiple Georgia stuff. So I think he'll be pro ready. I think it'll probably be the biggest thing for him. Whether or not he's good enough to truly do it, we'll see. But it won't be due to a lack of mental preparation or a lack of exposure to more pro level concepts defensively. Stackhouse is a guy that I think he showed up. He probably had the better week, quote unquote, at the game. Brinson had more high spots, but Stackhouse is going to bring less upside as a pass rusher and just simply be a huge dude in the middle. Brinson's a guy that was a five-star recruit that, you know, has never quite became the sum of his parts. He was a rotational D lineman for most of his career at Georgia. They also have a lot of really good D linemen at Georgia, so I don't think that's a knock on Brinson either. But guys that really did well during the week, and I was a bit surprised that Nasir didn't get drafted as well. I kind of figured that sixth, seventh round, he's about as sure of a thing as it was. So for him to go undrafted, I was a little surprised about. But Brinson kind of seemed like a big upside swing, right? A former high pedigree recruit at a big time program late in the draft. It was good. So again, I was a little surprised that the two guys didn't get drafted, but they were also two of the higher bonus undrafted free agents, right? So it was very clear the teams coveted them. And once you get in the seventh round, it's not a crapshoot. But you're drafting undrafted free agents you don't want to compete for. So, is what it is. But those are guys. I think again, their chemistry and their knowledge of playing together in the past, I think, can help them. I think I mentioned that for rookie minicamp, it's a little bit different, but like they all speak the same language, or at least they should. So, they should be able to pick things up quickly. And again, that's what I'm saying. I hope they can provide some legitimate competition very early in camp to. Whether they play or start or whatever it is, you know, to kind of just, again, increase the level of play in that unit and again, kind of raise the floor, whatever that may be.
Yeah, I thought Johnson and Stackhouse were definitely, you know, draftable players, seventh round, whatever you want to call it. And then I think, to me, Brinson was somebody that, had he not been surrounded by like just unbelievable talent at defensive tackle at Georgia, that maybe changes the expectation. And had it not been, you know, one of the deepest defensive tackle drafts that we've seen in a long time, I think this could have been a guy that in a different draft goes maybe around higher, maybe even two. That might be a little bit aggressive, but could have gone higher in most drafts. But, you know, just again, being around.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A bunch of talented kids at Georgia and in a very defensive tackle heavy class. I think it moved him down a little bit, and I think that was beneficial for Green Bay. Oh, and I cannot thank you enough. Tell us where we can find your incredible work and anything you want to plug on the way out.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Reese Draft. I'm a little bit less active than I used to be. It's usually more recruiting or UWP football stuff, but just kind of doing this and then doing work for Optimum Scouting, preparing for next year's Shrine Bowl, and have some other projects going on. But I'm sure I'll be in and out with draft takes and prospect takes and stuff. But not quite as active as I used to be, but that's where you can find me mostly, is on Twitter.
Well, thank you a ton for joining us on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. We will definitely do this again soon. It had been far too long, and you enjoy your training camp and rest of the offseason. It'll be the season before you know it, and we'll catch up soon.
No doubt. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Again, that is Owen Reese. Follow him at Reese Draft. This is the Pack-A-Day Radio Show. We'll be back with more right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.